The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Your hump day, our hump show. Good morning to you. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Glad to have you as we navigate the middle show of the work week. Ask hump. Amy anything coming up this hour. You've got just over 30 minutes to send your questions, creative, innovative, interesting, unduplicated, unimitated. That's how you find us on our show Twix at Amy After Hours. Don't spend too much time there. You get brain rot. Also on our Facebook page named after the show, YouTube channel as well, with a couple of new-ish videos there. And we'll do at least one more before we hit the Christmas holiday, which, by the way, is 3 weeks from this Wednesday morning. Christmas is a Wednesday this year, so if you're taking time off, you have to burn a couple of days around it, especially if you're traveling. I did not travel for Thanksgiving. I will be traveling before Christmas, so we'll see how it goes with, we believe, two dogs and two people. We're leaving the cat behind with a house sitter. And then whatever gifts we need and all kinds of fun stuff that you take with you on a Christmas road trip. That is exactly 3 weeks from today when it all becomes extremely important to the people for whom you are giving gifts, the people with whom you want to spend that time. And it's my second time navigating two families, but the first time coming from away and navigating two families. Last year, a little bit easier because we were already in Texas with the wedding. And so anniversary and Christmas all on the horizon. And it's coming up fast. I'm not ready. But I will avoid the brain rot that comes with scrolling on social. And instead, I'll scroll on Amazon to find gifts.
Now, I have anniversary.
When's your anniversary?
The 21st.
Oh my gosh, we are just 4 days apart.
Yes, so I have anniversary, Christmas, and my wife's birthday.
What day do you celebrate that birthday?
Well, that's 30.
Gotcha.
December 30.
Wait, is she the same day as Tiger Woods and LeBron James?
If she is, congratulations.
Well, hold on. I'm pretty sure. I know Tiger and LeBron share a birthday, and I think it's the 30th of December. Hold on, looking. Yes, December 30th. No joke. That's her and it's LeBron James.
I share mine with Frank Caliendo.
I don't know if I share mine with anyone famous. LeBron, I'm just confirming LeBron James, but I feel like this is something that I know. Yep, they're both December 30th.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he will be turning 40 on December 30th. Tiger is well past 40. Let's see, I think he's 49 this year, I believe. Don't quote me on that, but I think he's 49. It actually is in the process of trying to get back to playing health. So back to PGA Tour health. He was announcing it this week that he's not quite there yet.
I'm not tournament sharp yet. No, I'm still not there. And these are 20 of the best players in the world, and I'm not sharp enough to compete against them at this level. So when I'm ready to compete and play at this level, then I will.
Right. So on the cusp of his 49th birthday, he still wants to and believes that he can get back to tournament shape. Now, we know Tiger will never be a guy who's out there week in and week out. In fact, a lot of the best golfers in the world, they're figuring out ways to take time off. But this is his tournament in the Bahamas. It's the Hero World Challenge, and it's an unofficial event, but it sometimes is one that attracts the best players in the world, as he points out, and he doesn't believe that he's ready to compete, but he says, when I am, then I will. And he said the fire still burns to compete, but he's recovering from what is another back surgery. And I think that any time that we get with him back on the PGA Tour, it's a jolt, not just for the tour itself and for the players that are out there who enjoy seeing him. A little bit like Phil Mickelson. Remember, he won the British Open, or it's called the Open Championship, at 50 years old. And he was one of the oldest ever to win a major. And what a shockwave it sent. This was before he started with LIV and before that whole controversy that precipitated him taking a lot of time off. Remember, it was the time to self-reflect and all of that jazz. Anyway, Tiger Woods has that same impact when he does appear, when he's around. But there's been a lot of surgeries, of course. This one was reported as a back surgery. What people believe, it was his sixth back surgery. I've got friends who've gone through one or two, and they talk about the recovery process being excruciating. But the back injury, and then of course the foot and the leg that were damaged so extensively in that car wreck going back now nearly 4 years ago. It'll be 4 years ago in February. So he doesn't know when he's going to play again on tour. A lot of times he does not have the strength or the pain management to make it through an entire four rounds if he makes the cut. So it's a different Tiger Woods than what we're used to, but having him around, as I say, still does send some extra joy and excitement, a bit of a buzz through the PGA Tour. 855-212-4227. Also on our Facebook page and then our show Twix, you can send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. Coming up, another special tribute that I wanted to make sure I highlighted because I don't want to forget, and I don't think sports fans should forget either. But Mike is listening in California, wants to weigh in on the 3-game suspension for Azeez Alshire, the Texans linebacker. What do you think? Mike.
Hey there, Cam.
Yes, I can hear you.
Thank you. Long-time listener, appreciate picking up my call.
Sure.
I just had a quick question about this whole thing because, well, not a question, but a grievance. How in the heck is the NFL going to do this? It's kind of calling the kettle black, whatever you want to call that.
Hello, kettle, you're black. Yes.
Yeah, because the fact that you grew up on the East Coast, I'm assuming, John Ryan, are you familiar with him playing with the Eagles?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So one of, like, second votus dirtiest players ever with fines, 12 to 14. You now have a job in the NFL, so I'm assuming the NFL is either hire him because, hey, you were one of the dirtiest players, you can obviously call out with dirty plays and help us give out suspensions or fines, or they're trying to, like, you know, tough between the tails, like, yeah, we'll get you a job. But at the same time, like, you got this guy talking about you did so much erroneous things on the field. When I can go back and pull up one game against the Giants where he's cold-cocking guy, quote-unquote, B-slapping somebody across the face, making a helmet spin, all these different things, but you're the guy that's going to hand on the fine. That just seems like kind of like some bullcrap to me in that part, that you're going to hire this guy to do this job, but at the same time, he's going to hand down the so-called, whatever you want to call it, fine, penalty or whatever. When you get to look yourself in the mirror, and you got to remember, this guy also fined his son. He fined him like half of what he did, and he did something that was at least $12,000 fine. You only fined him like $5,000. So I hate the NFL for this right now with putting this leadership in place. Should get someone else, referees, whatever you want to get.
Oh, yes, because that would go over well.
Oh, yeah, well, that definitely will. But, I mean, hey, at least, you know, you got lawyers, right? Hey. Going to sue a guy for getting your concussion versus a guy that gave out concussions, gave out black eyes, gave out poked out eyes and broken fingers.
Okay.
But
okay,
you,
hold on.
You can't do your job.
All right, I got what you're saying, and I would say that you hit something right away when you first started talking. Like recognizes like. Is there a better person to recognize dirty play or to recognize play that violates NFL rules than John Runyon? Probably not, because he was out there violating the rules himself. And as you point out, I think it was, oh gosh, maybe 20 years ago. Don't quote me on the date. He was voted one of the dirtiest players in the NFL. So that actually makes him qualified, in my opinion, to be able to spot what is dirty and what is egregious and what is over the top, because the dude was doing it himself. Now, you can call him a hypocrite if you want to, but he's not playing anymore. Now he's representing the NFL and he has a job to do. So while I do understand the optics of it all, the fact is he's not on the field anymore. The rules were completely different. You talk to any former QB who watches the game today. So Boomer Esiason, friend of mine, former NFL MVP, Troy Aikman, who's told me before about the concussions in which he was knocked out cold and can't remember things. I mean, these are different rules now. Quarterbacks will tell you those hits, the things that are flagged now, used to be fair game. Anything was fair game. The stuff that happened when they were under a pile in a scrum there on the field after getting sacked. So the rules in the game have drastically changed since Runyon was playing. But again, the fact that he was on the field and he was trying to get away with these types of hits, even when they weren't against the rules, should tell you that he can spot this stuff a mile away.
Okay, agree with that. Now, however, I would treat him as such as, I forget his name right now, that's overseeing the referees. If you want to use him, utilize him to say, hey, from the booth, we think this might be targeting of this. What's your assessment on it? Well, based on what I did back when I played and based on what I seen when I was in the NFL, yes, that is targeting. You can use them in that respect. But to have someone to go over that say, no, you need a fine for this, that's like me being a felon that robbed three banks and all of a sudden I decided to get my lawyer degree or become a judge and see someone in front of me that robbed a bank for $20 say, no, you know what? You did what I did, but you did for less, but I still give you 10 years. That's what I'm saying about that. I wouldn't mind him one part being part of the refereeing crew or whatever you want to call it to spot C and go, hey, no, that was actual targeting. No, he was going at the ankle. No, he's trying to take a knee out. No, that's actually this is the penalty that it should be, and that should be that at that point. But not handing out fines and suspensions. Absolutely not.
Okay, I understand. I think you're probably not alone in that. I would just say, as a reminder, Mike, he works for the NFL. So nothing that he's doing has been, you know, I guess it's not solo is what I'm saying. It's not autonomous. He's serving as the mouthpiece and the conduit and the VP who hands out the fines. But he's doing this with the support of the NFL. And again, I would suspect that they put him in that role for the express purpose of being able to identify these things that potentially he did or got away with when he was there himself on the field. So I agree with you. I understand the optics, but I kind of think he's the perfect guy to do it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Before we get to our break, it's been a while since we've spoken the names Johnny and Matthew Gaudreau here on the show, only because we've been involved in football and the hockey season is moving forward, not because we've forgotten how these two brothers were tragically killed in a car accident at the hands of a reported drunk driver on the eve of their sister's wedding. They were honored by the Columbus Blue Jackets extensively on their opening night, their home opener, and the Calgary Flames, a franchise for whom Johnny played 8 seasons. They also brought the family to town on Tuesday night to honor them and to have them be involved in what was the initial puck drop and a really neat ceremony for the Gaudreau family.
For tonight's Cervelo face-off, the Gaudreau family will be using a beautiful hand-painted puck created by a young fan named Madden and left in tribute by Johnny on the steps of the Saddle Dome this past summer. To the Gaudreau family, on behalf of the Sea of Red, the Calgary Flames, the Columbus Blue Jackets, and the National Hockey League, we continue to offer our deepest condolences. All together, Sea of Red, please join us in a moment of applause to show our love for Johnny, Matthew, and the entire Gaudreau family.
I appreciate appreciate that it's not a moment of silence. Instead, it's applause. It's raising your voices and your hands and maybe your glasses too to remember the Goodrows. And really neat that the family was there for this game between the Flames and the Blue Jackets, the two franchises that Johnny played for. His father and his mother, who we've seen around. His father's been doing morning skates and practices with different teams, including the Flyers, because he lives near Philadelphia. So his parents, Johnny's wife, Meredith, his sisters, they were all in Calgary this week, and they took part in not just this pregame ceremony, but Dad was invited to be part of the Flames practice on Monday. I want to make sure that we remember them still. They've cast a large shadow. Their deaths have cast a large shadow over this season, and a lot of teams are paying tribute or remembering them, just understanding the impact that the Gaudreau family has had on the NHL. And that doesn't go away simply because life moves on. So that was special, I thought, in Calgary on Tuesday night. At Amy After Hours, you can send your last-minute questions for Ask Amy Anything. Coming up, a conversation with Jennifer Rosati about the WNBA, about women's basketball this offseason unlike any other. And, of course, Caitlin Clark, because the WNBA is getting ready to expand the league and take advantage of the skyrocketing popularity. Glad to have you with us on the Hump Show. The what? The Hump Show here. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Couple minutes left to send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. So make sure you find us online at Amy After Hours or on our Facebook page. Look for that bright orange box because it's my favorite color and the Ask Amy thought bubble. Only a couple of these left in the 2024 calendar year. You may think there's not a lot happening in women's basketball other than, say, the beginning of the college hoop season, but that is not true. It is a busy offseason for the WNBA, who skyrocketed in popularity in large part because of Caitlin Clark in her rookie season, a record season in which she won a unanimous Rookie of the Year award. What is she up to now? Well, she's taking time off, and she's gearing up for the 25 campaign, which will look different than 2024. Had a chance to catch up with Connecticut Sun president and UConn legend Jennifer Rosati, also coached the American 3x3 team in Paris that won a gold medal, and we'd promised to bring her back on the show after her Olympics experience. But there's a lot going on with the Sun right now because Stephanie White departed and is the new head coach of the Indiana Fever, and so the Sun have been looking for their new head coach. And when I talked to Jen this afternoon, I asked her, what's the latest with your head coaching search?
You know, obviously been an intense couple weeks because normally November isn't that busy for me. But this added a little bit of excitement to my plate. But we're having a feeling of optimism. You know, obviously losing Stephanie wasn't easy. You know, we really enjoyed having her here and thought she did a great job. But, you know, her personal decision to move closer to home and go to the Fever was something I understood, you know, as a mom and wife. I get the strain of coaching and how it can, you know, emotionally be taxing. So I'm glad she found a new home, and, you know, now we're looking to the future. So we spent last couple weeks talking to a lot of great people. I think that's part of the process of being able to connect, and I don't want to say interview, but just more have dialogue with really good people in the game is really nice and created some optimism around our future. And so we're really close to announcing our new head coach, and we're excited to get the ball rolling here.
What priorities were you looking for as the next head coach of the Sun?
Yeah, I think that's hard. You know, last time I can remember when I talked to the players, it was like, we want a former player and we want somebody who has head coaching experience. And it was like a really specific list of criteria. And so I felt really fortunate that I was able to hire Stephanie. I think I was able to be a little bit more open-minded this time around. I think the game is evolving, and we need to figure out how to have something that differentiates us in Connecticut, right? And we're not a big market, but we are a market that's had a lot of success. And I think high-level coaching was something that was a priority. I know that sounds silly, but somebody who's done it in a head coaching seat at a high level was, you know, something that we really sought out. But we also looked at a lot of people who were involved in the WNBA too. Like, I think it's a little bit of both. There are some assistants that have been around a long time. that we interviewed. There are candidates from different buckets. I think we try to just be really open with our process and feel like the right people would, you know, kind of rise to the top throughout. And that happened for us. So I'm excited. You know, I think that there's a lot of excitement around the WNBA right now, but our players, they expect excellence, right? They expect somebody who really knows the game and can handle the pressure, especially in Connecticut, and handle the expectation of wanting to win a championship and be able to motivate them and make them better, like develop them as players and people and consistently push them to be their best. So I think we're really excited about who we found to do that.
I could be wrong. You can correct me if I am, but it seems like this offseason in the WNBA has more attention, more interest than any that we've seen in the past, save maybe last year when we knew Caitlin Clark would be the number one overall pick. Much more attention, the skyrocketing popularity coming off of this last season. We've got the players' union opting out of its contract, and so negotiations are going on. We've got expansion. We've got a bunch of different coaching changes. How would you compare that to what you've had in the past as the president of the Sun?
Yeah, it's unlike any other offseason, which is great, right? It's exactly what we want. We want to be relevant 12 months out of the year. And there's a lot of things that have made us relevant probably that we weren't expecting. And I think the coaching changes is one of them, right? I think that there's a lot of maybe surprise, right, in some of the moves. There was a lot of excitement in some of the hires so far. You know, a lot of trash talking, you know, there's a lot of storylines around the WNBA right now. And that's been a lot of fun, I think, for people to follow. And, you know, then you add in Golden State and the expansion draft coming up this week. You add in the addition of Toronto and Portland as expansion teams. And then the fact that the players opted out of the CBA. I think there's just so much to talk about and so much to be excited for. And I think people are really starting to pay attention. And I think that's great for our players. It's great for the growth of all of our businesses and especially the league, and being able to stay relevant for the next 4 months, I think is going to be important for the WNBA. And I think that has been a priority for the league. I think free agency, you're going to see a lot of chatter in January about free agency moves and signings and, you know, player movement between teams. There's still coaches to be hired and assistant coaches to be hired and GMs to be hired. So, hopefully we can just keep this steady stream of WNBA news throughout the college season and create that similar level of excitement come May for the 2025 season.
Connecticut Sun President Jennifer Rosati with us here after hours with Amy Lawrence after what was a banner year for the league and getting close now to 30 years as an established organization. What kind of growth from the beginning where you started to where the league is now?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody today about the fact that we actually, over the course of the season, had more fans in 2003 than we did in 2024. And people don't realize that. The popularity of the WNBA was at an all-time high in the early 2000s. Hmm. You know, so the issue is that it I don't want to say plummeted, but it definitely dipped from there. And then you saw it skyrocket again here this past season. So I think the challenge for all of us is to try to understand, you know, why did it dip and how do we make sure that doesn't happen again, right? Because we are putting a great product on the floor. We have more eyeballs on our game than we've ever had before. You know, our TV viewership is higher than it's ever.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ever been. And I think it is a testament to the star power of our league and our players. I think the league has made a concerted effort to market our players at a much higher level. I think players' individual brands are at an all-time high. Individual endorsements are really like skyrocketing popularity amongst these players coming out of college. So I think we just want to make sure as team executives that this is here to stay, right? That our businesses are flourishing and it's just not a one-time or a two-time thing. Like, this is something that we've really worked hard to set a great foundation to propel us into the future. So I'm excited for what's to come. And I think we can only go up from here.
For so many years, decades really, women's basketball players, the best in the world, have had to travel overseas in the offseason to be able to get good competition, to stay in playing shape. Now a couple of the players, including Breanna Stewart, have started this league called Unrivaled. How does the WNBA view that?
I think the WNBA is supportive of our players not going overseas, right? I think that part of the last collective bargaining agreement was to put in place prioritization rules to make sure that our players were going to be available at the start of training camp in late April. And that prohibited quite a few players from playing in leagues that were going deep into May. But what it did do was kind of create a void for some players in terms of like being able to make money in the off season. And so I think Unrivaled came out of that, and I think the teams and the league are supportive that our players have a safe place to play in the off season, the 6-week season, a place where we'll all be able to support and watch them play, you know, in one place versus like having them all scatter, go overseas for 8 months and then come back to the WNBA season exhausted. So we all want these players to be able to take advantage while they're young of making the kind of money that they deserve to make as a professional athlete. I think we're moving in that direction probably with this new collective bargaining agreement. I think we're all supportive of that.
I would be remiss if I did not ask you about Caitlin Clark and her rookie season, because even when you and I had spoken, it was before the Olympics, the league was getting ready to take a break. After that, not only did the Fever take off, but she set crazy records, 19 assists in a game. So now looking back on it as a whole, what do you think?
Well, what I think is that people don't realize how hard it is to be a college senior, right, and immediately go to a WNBA training camp and basically start WNBA professional basketball games a month after you are done playing your college career.
Right.
And they're typically exhausted. And I think that that Olympic break for many of the rookies, or all of them that had a chance to take a month off after playing straight basketball for 10 months, was really beneficial. And you saw really great performances coming out of the Olympic break. I think for the Fever in particular, they were able, as a team, a young team, really gel, get practice in, you know, watch a lot of film. I think in Caitlin, because she's such a student of the game, she probably watched a ton of film, identified some weaknesses from the first half of the season, and immediately addressed them. So just really impressive how she came out in the second half of the season and just continued not just to elevate her own individual game, but to elevate the play of the Fever. And a lot of that had to do with Kelsey Mitchell being healthy, right? It was Lexi Hull resurgence of like getting back into the lineup and really being a great shooter and a 3-and-D type player for them. Their bench post players were healthy, Temi and Damaris Dantas. So they had a full complement of players that were healthy, and they really made it difficult for a lot of us in the second half of the season, and certainly a scary first-round matchup for the Connecticut Sun. But you try to remember that these are young women that are physically being asked to do a lot, and that break probably physically and emotionally did a lot of good for young players in our league to have a great second half of the season.
Jennifer Rosati is with us from the Connecticut Sun. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, a UConn legend for people who are unfamiliar. And I had I really enjoyed seeing the ceremony for Gino Auriemma, mostly because it was so cool to see such a collection of UConn players, dozens of you all that were back to celebrate him becoming the all-time wins leader.
Yeah.
What was that night like for you as someone who was there almost at the beginning?
It was special. I think for most of us that were there, we were pretty far removed from our careers. And so life goes on, right? Like you always have this tie to UConn, but you know, you get married, you have a family, you get a new job, you're decades away from this experience. And when you have that opportunity to go back and be with the people that you had the experience with, it just, everything floods back, right? All these memories of the time you spend together early mornings and like after hours and on in the gym and in the weight room and running sprints and like all these, you know, off the court memories that you have from parties that we went to and places that we traveled, and these stories start flowing. It's just such a great reminder of how special that time in our lives were. And we don't get to reflect on that all the time anymore, right? We have so many things that are cluttering our lives or our minds, and to be able for like 24 hours to just go back and be a UConn Husky again and be with the people that you grew up with, right? We grew up from girls to women in that time frame, and we experienced a lot of good and bad, and lot of highs in our time there. And he's the common denominator, right? He's the one that brought us there and sold us on a vision and delivered on that vision. And so it was just a really special night to be able to celebrate him, but also to remind ourselves like what that time in our lives really meant for us at the time, but also what it meant for us in our future and who we've all become as women and who we've all become in the past that we chose for ourselves.
40 years for Gino Auriemma, yeah, and Chris Daly, of course, who's been with him, yes, the, yep, entire time. This is probably an unfair question, but why have they been so successful for pretty much the entire 40 years?
Yeah. Well, I think it comes down to the fact that they understand that it's about people. They set out to recruit the right people. They hired good staff. They found players that aligned with what was important to them, selflessness and a work ethic and a basketball IQ. And they found players that wanted to be part of something bigger than themselves, right? And that's not easy. And not every coach spends enough time doing that. And then they work to build the relationship and make sure that we knew that they cared about us beyond just the basketball floor, that we were people to them and we were like their daughters, right? Adopted daughters for a time. And so it created an environment where we would run through the wall for them. And then as they continued to get better, they could find better players that wanted to run through the wall for them. But I think they were always good at identifying the right kid, not the right player, but the right person, somebody who wanted to be pushed and wanted to be motivated and didn't mind that it was going to be hard. You know, they wanted it to be hard. They wanted to be challenged. And I think they always look for players and that had those characteristics. And then they never changed their standards. They might change the way that they coach. They might change their style a little bit, but they never change their standards and their values. And so I don't know how they've done it. Honestly, it's way harder than people can possibly imagine to sustain that level of success. But it also doesn't surprise me when I look at the players that have gone through there and the characteristics of the people that they've continued to recruit.
How much longer do you think he'll keep coaching?
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, you know, I think what's fun is that, you know, when you go back and you have the chance to talk to him, you can tell that he still loves it. If that wasn't the case, you know, if I went back and he was just complaining about this and that, you know, then maybe I'd like, okay, it's time, dude. You know, you need to give it up. But, you know, you go back there and he's still excited about getting to go to work every day and work with these kids and he loves them. And, you know, he jokes about how they drive him nuts, but you can tell he loves it. And so I just think that that's important, that he's showing up every day and able to be the best version of himself for them. And they appreciate that. And so it makes the job enjoyable. So I don't know. We'll see. I think he wants to get one more if I had to guess, but I don't know what happens after that, right?
Jen, the last time we talked to you, we were looking ahead to the Olympics and told you if you, yep, won a gold medal, we had to bring you back to talk about the experience in Paris. With all of the, I'll use my air quotations and call it controversy over the way the team was put together, what was the experience, yep, like?
It was great. I mean, it's the experience of a lifetime. You think about the fact that the Olympics is like the ultimate, right, competition, measuring you against the world. And then you think about the fact that it was in Paris. Like, I don't know that there could be a better setting. LA has a lot to live up to. And then most importantly, you think about the people you got to do it with, right? And that's always been what has driven me to want to be a part of USA Basketball, whatever capacity that they ask of me, is that I love the people that I get to work with. And, you know, you're showing up with the best of the best and people who are going to always bring a level of excellence that is unmatched. And to be able to be a part of selecting that roster and watching them work and watching the adversity that they overcame, watching Cheryl and her staff and, you know, what they brought every single day to prepare their team and watch the players come in and out and prepare every single day to win a gold medal. It's an unbelievable experience. People don't realize how hard they had to work and what they had to sacrifice, right? You don't realize what you sacrifice to put yourself in a position to be part of that legacy of 5-on-5, 8 consecutive gold medals. And so that in itself was like a special to experience. And then for me, the 3x3 was so fun. Like, it's such a small group and I built relationships with these players that will last a lifetime. And I still text them and, you know, they're still a part of my life because we were in the trenches together, and it's so different from 5-on-5. And we're literally like huddled up outside. You know, we're 0-3, and everybody thinks that we're like sailing the world, and what's going on with USA women's basketball? And then we storm all the way back, and we're like 1 point away from being in the gold medal game. And there was an enormous amount of pride for me in that group, and how little time we had to prepare, and how well they did together. And again, I don't think people realize much I put into that personally, years of preparation and years of my time. And I said to them, hey, but you know how many people go to the Olympics and don't get anything? I don't care what color the medal is. It's an amazing feat. And when you think about it that way, it's really, really special to have been a part of it.
Well, considering the reception that the French athletes got there, no matter what they did, whether it was winning or coming in last, it raises the bar for LA and all American athletes. Yeah. I can imagine it's a huge goal for most Olympians.
Yes, for sure. For sure. And, you know, it's crazy to think, you know, that LA is going to be such a great platform for basketball, for women's basketball, where we are right now. And, you know, whoever the lucky coach is that has to chase down a ninth consecutive, right? And, you know, obviously, you know, the goal to get all four teams back in the Olympics for basketball, 3x3 and 5-on-5, and win four gold medals, that has yet to be done. So it's just exciting to think about being on our home turf. I'm sure for USA basketball, it, you know, brings up a lot of new challenges in terms of how many people want to be involved, but it's going to be really exciting to see our country show up for all of our athletes in every sport. And that's the other thing that's special about the Olympics, is like our athletes go there and they're inspired by the other Olympians. Like they are in awe of the other Olympians that are on that journey with them, and they go and support whenever they can. And that is really special when you're not just seeing the best basketball players in the world, you're seeing the best athletes in the world that have this bond that will last forever. And it was a really cool experience to watch.
Well, congratulations on a gold medal as the coach of the 3x3 team. What a neat experience, and now setting up for LA. And it's always good to connect with you. So much happening in women's basketball, which is amazing. So thank you for a few minutes of your time.
Of course. Anytime, Amy. Thank you.
2024, unlike any other for the sport of women's basketball. Now the college season is starting to gear up, holiday tournaments, but the WNBA is busier than it's ever been in an off season. And Jennifer Rosati, the head coach, formerly of the Hartford women's basketball team. I traveled with her for 8 seasons, calling her games on radio, so know her really well. She, of course, is a UConn legend, and I wanted our early morning audience to hear her, but a lot to say about winning gold at the Olympics in Paris, and Gino Auriemma being part of his celebration as he becomes the all-time wins leader, but also about hiring a head coach. And if you missed the beginning of that interview, she said the Connecticut Sun are on the verge of announcing their new head coach, so it could come very soon. We talked to her just before that on Tuesday afternoon, and I appreciate that relationship. She keeps me really connected in women's basketball. That'll be podcasted completely as soon as the show is done. Now, because we ran a little bit long with our conversation, we're going to bump Ask Amy. No, I don't mean bump it as in blow it off completely. I mean bump it to next hour, just so producer Pete has more than, say, 3 minutes to ask his questions. So maybe, just maybe, we'll get a different audience that hears Ask Amy Anything on this edition of the show. You've got a few extra minutes now to send your questions at Amy After Hours online or on our Facebook page. We'll do that at 20 minutes past the hour, 5:20 a.m. Eastern, 2:20 a.m. Pacific. Straight ahead, we're talking about baseball and this ridiculous proposal, and I don't even think it's real. Just stop it altogether, Rob Manfred, about the golden at-bat rule. Well, Blake Snell, he would have to deal with that as one of the new pitchers of the Dodgers. He was introduced on Tuesday in L.A. and talking about why he chose the Dodgers. Also, the latest on Juan Soto, that domino could drop, or I should say that bag could drop any day now. Thanks for hanging out with us. Good morning to you. It's the Hump Show After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Well, Amy, it looks like for the ninth time in the last 11 years, Alabama is going to be playing for a chance to bring home a national championship. Crimson Tide currently hold the final at-large bid just in front of Miami and Ole Miss after the Hurricanes' upset loss to Syracuse. Now, barring an SMU loss to Clemson in the ACC championship game, it looks like Alabama is going to make the field. Oregon remains as the one seed, followed by Texas, Penn State, Notre Dame, and Georgia. Ohio State fell to number 8. Elsewhere, Michigan has fired offensive coordinator Kirk Campbell after 3 years and just one as their play caller. NFL Texans linebacker Azeez Al-Shaair suspended 3 games for his hit on Trevor Lawrence Sunday. Houston GM Nick Caserio, not happy to say the least.
What we take umbrage is just the picture that's been painted about Azeez, his intentions, who he is as a person. I mean, quite frankly, it's and it's unfair to the individual. It's unfair to the organization.
Checking the NBA with the Bucks looking to secure Group B in the NBA Cup.
Prince is being crowded outside by Hardaway. Gets it away to Lillard. Now to Giannis. Giannis top of the arc. He's at the free throw line. He's going to pull up, and he's still perfect. He is 10 of 10 from the field tonight, and that was his 5th mid-range jumper.
Giannis finished 10 of 11 from the floor, 28 points, 7 rebounds, 8 assists. Bucks disposed of the Pistons 128-107 to win Group B in advance in the NBA Cup. Call courtesy of the Bucks Radio Network. Elsewhere, the Knicks lit up the Magic 121-106. They win Group A. Orlando also advanced as well. Mavericks rallied by the Grizzlies 121-116, courtesy of 37 points and 12 rebounds from Luka Doncic as they move on. Thunder dropped the Jazz 133-106. They win Group B. Sixers topped the Hornets 110-104 behind 29 from Paul George. Nuggets able to outlast the Mavericks 119-115. Nikola Jokic 38 points, 10 rebounds. Cavs rolled the Wizards 118-87. Suns topped the Spurs 104-93, but they lost Kevin Durant to a sprained ankle. Clippers thumped the Blazers 127-105. Raptors down the Pacers 122-111. Scottie Barnes poured in 35, and the Kings too much for the Rockets 120-111. College hoops, Clemson surprised Kentucky 70-66. Tennessee rocked Syracuse 96-70. Michigan upset Wisconsin 67-64. And Villanova shocked Cincinnati 68-60. I'm Marco Belletti.
Hey, like us on Facebook. Our handle is INF Sportsnet. That's INF Sportsnet for our Facebook page. This is the Infinity Sports Network.
Free agency, you're buying the backside of a guy's career, the accomplishments that they have had. And with Blake, one thing that's really exciting for us is as much success as he's had, we feel like there's more in there.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of Andrew Friedman as the Dodgers introduce Blake Snell as their new ace, and he believes the best is yet to come for Blake. But how did Snell himself make this choice? His third team inside the NL West. Remember, he was with the Padres, then he spent a year with the Giants, then he opted out because he wanted a better free agent deal, and he got it with LA.
You look at what they've built, what they're doing. It's just something you want to be a part of. I mean, look at the first three hitters in the lineup. It's tough to go against. So to be on the other side, know that they're going to be, you know, hitting for me. Yeah, pretty exciting.
Now, I'm just wondering if anyone asked Blake Snell about the proposed golden at-bat rule, which might force him to face, name Francisco Lindor, right? He was the runner-up for the NL MVP. But I can think of a bunch of Braves that he wouldn't want to face more than once in a run-through of the order of the lineup. Ridiculous. And the reaction of former major leaguers online has been very staunchly in opposition. Some of them saying they would never watch baseball again if this was the case. So I don't know if Blake Snell had to answer that question. But at the very least, let's just say for the sake of argument, and make me stick a fork in my eye, that the golden at-bat rule does get instituted just because Rob Manfred is attracted to a gimmick like flies are attracted to poo. Let's just say that Blake Snell and the rest of Major League Baseball has to deal with this golden at-bat and this best hitter getting an extra spot at the plate. At least he doesn't have to face Ohtani because Ohtani's on his team.
I mean, it helps with him in the lineup for sure. Yeah, that's big motivation. I just think the team in general, though, the team's so good. It's sound. They enjoy playing the game together. It makes you want to be a part of that and help. But with Shohei, the name, everything he's done in his career, it's amazing. And you want to be around players like that when you're trying to be one of the best in the game.
Looking back over the years, we've competed against Blake a lot. And you know how the old adage, if you can't beat them, just have them join us. So we couldn't beat them, so we're going to have them join us in helping us win a World Series next year and into the future.
So think about the rotation for the Dodgers. Shohei Ohtani, though we're not sure he will be healthy by the time the season begins for pitching, because remember, he had the rotator cuff surgery, so another offseason surgery for Shohei. But Shohei Ohtani, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Tyler Glasnow, who is expected to be healthy. Don't know when Clayton Kershaw might return. He really does want to try to pitch one more time with the Dodgers, but now adding Blake Snell. And you're talking about $52 million up front. So when Andrew Friedman says if you can't beat him, sign him, he means if you can't beat him, sign him to a lot of money. By the way, same agent, Scott Boras, representing Snell and Juan Soto. And the decision for Soto could come down before the end of this week. That's the report. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.